Hey everyone, you're listening to the Road of His Best Ball series. I am your host, Colin Kelly. You can find me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. Today's show is brought to you by the FFPC, and today on this show I'm delighted to be joined by Josh ADHD. He's a writer over at Fantasy Insiders, and I have to say, we look around the community, the fantasy football community, he is definitely a wizard, and he is a wizard of data and analytics, and you can follow him on Twitter at FantasyADHD. I'm sure if you're interested in best ball, maybe you're just trying to get into best ball, you do want to follow Josh here on Twitter, and if you have been playing best ball over the last couple of seasons, he is, I'm quite sure, somebody you're already following. So, Josh, my man, thanks for joining me on today's show. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Colin. How are you?
I'm doing good. We were joking before we started. You were meant to be the peeling back that curtain a little bit for the listeners. You're meant to be the kind of premiere debut episode of this series, and we've just we're getting along to it now here at the end of the series. So good things come to those who wait, is a famous saying here in Ireland. So I think the listeners are in for a good one today.
Yeah, I'm excited. Let's get to it.
So jumping straight into it. First of all, 2017 seeing you dominate Twitter, as I mentioned there. I think everyone in the best ball community is probably following you from last season, and then the work continued throughout the offseason. The charts and the ADP info for all the best ball leagues was something that I really enjoy. Just even if it wasn't when I was drafting, I just like to see the different kind of graphics. The graphics is some way that I know, like yourself, get that data in graphic form, and it's so much easier to understand rather than just having the numbers down there in front of you. So was that something you planned to work on as much as you did last year, or is it something that just kind of ran out of control?
Yeah, it's I probably somewhere in the middle of that. It was something I definitely was interested in doing, especially after doing some similar work for the Scott Fishbowl back when it was, Fishbowl 480. And so I'd gotten into it probably late last February when leagues kicked off and started tinkering with this and that. And folks were really interested in some of the stuff I was putting on Twitter from a graphical standpoint. Like you mentioned, visuals tell a story that numbers maybe aren't as clear about sometimes. So, I'd make a plot about this. I'd make a plot about that. I'd get some really good feedback from it. And at that point, I was like, well, I need to build an app out of this because I can't go and make it by hand every time somebody has a question about something, and usually that person's me. So I build an app, that way I can go and just click a couple of buttons and it gives me the information I'm looking for. And so along those lines, I'm like, well, if I'm going to build this for myself, it really behooves me just to go ahead and share it with everybody. It's the data's out there freely. The work's already done. And in order to just kind of propagate the popularity of best ball, I thought, well, let's just share it with everybody and let them do what they will with the information. It turned out, I guess, it was pretty popular. Folks were really receptive to the idea of having some more visual information out there about the best ball drafts that they were taking part in. So did it run out of control? Probably at times it did. My wife surely thought so. But at the same time, I think it's still got a long way to go. So I still have a lot of ideas on how to leverage the information that we get from the different leagues, and I really want to put those to use, and that's something I'm planning to do this year at Fantasy Insiders.
Yeah, and when you mentioned the kind of different changes in ADP, one of the things I enjoyed was certain backfields, there might be three or four players in the backfield, and we've seen it with the Patriots, we've seen it with the Eagles. There was a couple of those where there was no real clear number one, and you could see the change in ADP and the players maybe climbing up five or six rounds, a player dropping five or six rounds. We've seen it with the Seahawks as well after Eddie Lacy signed with them. So let's have a fun one and look at who was the biggest ADP leap in 2017 from the start to the end, and did they turn out to be very, very good values, or did they turn out to be very, very big busts?
Yeah, I think it was probably, I would say from a magnitude perspective, probably Kareem Hunt. And that's because in, let's say, July, up until right at the beginning of training camp, he was available anywhere from the 10th to the 14th round, depending on when you drafted. And then as soon as the Spencer Ware injury hit, which was pretty early on in training camp, Kareem Hunt was suddenly a third round pick. And for a player to go from, jump seven rounds up to that portion of the draft over the course of the number of drafts that are taking place that late in the offseason, that's just a magnificent jump for a player to take in that short of a span. I mean, we're talking like 3 days that Kareem Hunt jumped from, 10th, 11th round up to third round. Significant. Some of the other players that were really, I'd say, affected by the marketplace, Brandon Cooks, obviously when he was traded from New Orleans to New England, many perceived that he was going to be bona fide number one and probably see in the neighborhood of 120 targets there. And his ADP reflected that. I think he was probably a fourth or fifth round ADP, and in some cases he was jumping up in the late first. So it was he saw a pretty significant jump. I'd say he probably paid back the dividend on his on the ADP that was required to draft him. You know, you mentioned the running backs, New England in particular. Probably the most interesting one that, you could see throughout the entire offseason of 17 was for Rex Burkhead, who at the beginning of best ball season was, you know, anywhere from the 17th to the 20th round where he was being drafted, if he was being drafted at all. And then as soon as he signed with New England, he's a fourth round pick. He's a fifth round pick. And then once New England also went and got Mike Gillisley, then you see Rex Burkhead drop all the way back off to the 16th and 17th round because people were chasing Mike Gillisley. So watching his progression through the offseason was very interesting. I think he ended up probably being somewhere around the 11th or 12th round at ADP at the end of the offseason. And I think we could probably say he paid off his investment price, except for maybe the folks that had to draft him really highly in mid-March before Gillisley came to the team.
Yeah, if you drafted him just in that kind of short space of time, it mightn't have paid off. But it's you know, it's always a lot of people look at these players, and unless they really crush the value or else they're a huge disappointment, people don't just sometimes look at it as, yeah, they met their value and I'm very, very happy with my investment on it, unless it's a situation where you draft them in the 10th round and they finish with a second round value. Drafting those players in the 10th round and finishing with 10th round value also can help. But of course, in best ball leagues, we are trying to hit that ceiling. And some of our listeners may be new to best ball, maybe getting into it for the first time this year, trying to get started. They're used to their redraft leagues, but obviously best ball is a huge benefit because you basically draft it and then that's it. You don't have to worry about it from that point forward. It's set it and forget it pretty much, and you're happy to roll out and you see how it goes throughout the season. But what do you think are some of the biggest differences in approach as to how you draft in best ball versus your season long and in season management leagues? What are some of the biggest differences for you? Do you prioritize a different type of player than you have in a season long league, or do you find that it's, you know, pretty much the same both ways? Are you really trying to hit those high ceiling players?
You know, typically I will take more chances in a redraft league where I know that I can hit the waiver wire and find somebody else eventually. So I'd say in best ball leagues, I look a little bit more for safety and a little bit more for a high floor, consistent player, or at least a player I think is going to perform in a consistent manner. But that doesn't mean I'm going to look for, let's say, a very safe player at every pick. You know, it depends on the draft. And it's probably the first five or six rounds, I'm looking for a relatively safe player that I expect will return a floor value to me, someone that I can depend on a week-to-week basis, and should have a little bit of upside attached to him, but also a player that I feel pretty confident in the role and should, you know, on a week-to-week basis, give me what I expect. And then in the rounds after six, I'm looking to put more risk into a player, obviously, because that's where the risk lies. If they didn't have risk, they'd be a higher round pick. So in that sense, as the draft gets later and later, I will look for riskier players that I think can give me X amount of weeks of value. Let's say they score, you know, for a player in the mid rounds, I need a player that can score in half the weeks or more. And late rounds, I want a player that can score in four of the weeks or more, and give my team a ceiling potential in addition to the floor potential they get from the early rounds that can hopefully put me through to first place at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think it's a very, very good strategy. It's something that I find myself going in the same way. Obviously, when you're talking about that in the preseason, and you know, if you're doing it in February, March, April, it's very, very easy to think that those players are going to have that value. But as you can see with your data throughout the offseason, that really can change very, very quickly and in very short spaces of time. I just want to tell the listeners first about the RotoViz NFL Pass. And of course, being a listener to the podcast, you can get a subscription with a 30% discount right now. It's available through the NFL Podcast homepage. That is rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription will give you unlimited access to all our NFL content and tools. And best of all, it helps support the pod. So be sure and get that 30% discount now for an NFL Pass. Get yourself ready for best ball season. Get yourself ready for the 2018 regular season. That link is rotoviz.com/podcast. So now that we kind of know the outcomes of last season and the, you know, from your ADP research and the data that you worked on last year, what is your biggest takeaway from the data versus the results? And is there any way that you think you can make that actionable now during best ball draft season?
You know, it's a tough question. I've been asking myself this for about 12 weeks now, and I don't have a good answer. I would say that the biggest takeaway from the data versus the results is that many people, myself included, thought that zero running back would work well in best ball drafts for 2017, and that we could go wide receiver heavy at the beginning of drafts and have a decided advantage. And that didn't work out in 2017, and it kind of followed along with what we had seen prior to that as well. So I think we're maybe withdrawing a little bit from zero running back as like a de facto strategy for a lot of people, and saying, maybe it makes some sense to take a running back in the first couple rounds if you feel confident that that particular running back is going to give you that floor, the high floor that you need out of that type of pick week in, week out. So how can I say it's actionable? Well, me personally, I'm probably going to, you know, modify my strategy a little bit in general. Now, there will be some drafts that I do run zero RB, and there will be some drafts where I probably run zero wide receiver, and I'll mix and match a little bit, because really the way you should look at best ball drafts is it's something you're going to do a good many of. So let's say you're going to do 20 best ball drafts. You're building a portfolio of players, and it's really akin to having 20 GPP lineups in a tournament in a given week, where you're going to spread your ownership among a group of players, and then you're going to sprinkle in some other players in very small percentages that, you know, maybe they're high upside and super low floor plays, but, you know, players that could give you the ability to get over the top. So your best ball portfolio is very similar to that. There's some slight differences, but in general, that's kind of the idea. So when I say it's actionable during draft season, I'm probably going to scale back maybe some of the extremes that I worked last year with my draft strategy and come back maybe a little more centric, except where it makes some sense, but probably a little more centrist of a view this year with the type of players I pick, when I pick them, et cetera.
Yeah, something that I'm interested, you kind of touched on it there, you know, the zero RB strategy or the zero wide receiver strategy. Last year, a lot of people in the best ball community, myself included, went in more so with that zero RB strategy, waiting to kind of the 8th, 10th round to pick that first running back. And it really did kind of, unless you get lucky, it did backfire on the majority of us. So do you think this year, though, something that I'm trying to start to look into as I look at ADP at this present moment in time, do you think we're going to see an over kind of correction, and people are going to start to go very, very heavy RB at the start of drafts, and maybe there will still be that there advantage to people who wait and go with wide receiver at that point of the draft to kind of stock up on that? Do you think sometimes we might look at an overcorrection in the market like that?
Yeah, I think the market always overcorrects on a year-to-year basis, and the early ADP that I've looked at so far indicates that RB heavy in the first 2 to 3 rounds is what that's going to be the theme for the day. At least for probably the first couple months. It may even out a little bit as we get heavier further into the off season. But right now I see it's very RB heavy. And when I say RB heavy, I mean 11 to 14 running backs going in the first 2 rounds of a best ball draft, which is that's unbelievable if we look at and compare that to the last 2 seasons, 2016, 2017, when we were seeing mostly wide receivers, a couple of running backs, maybe a quarterback, maybe a tight end. Now it's the wide receiver and the running back quantity has virtually flipped.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy to see that they're flipped from, you know, 2 years ago to this point in time. So it's going to be a very interesting season to see if people do stick to that strategy, or as you mentioned, if it changes as the off season progresses here and the best ball season really ramps up. From a strategy perspective, are there any areas off the best ball community, and I know you're looking at a lot of stuff in best ball with these, you know, a lot of the community's coming to you for this advice. Is there anything you think that they're overemphasizing as a whole, as a collective, you know, whether it's lineup construction or, you know, ADP values? Is there anything you think that they're missing out on, maybe overemphasizing?
From an overemphasis standpoint, I don't think so, unless they cling to a single strategy for their teams. And I would recommend against that, because again, that's not a resilient way to build a portfolio. It's more of a, you know, that's an outlier where you're hoping for a single outcome or a, you know, one type of outcome, whereas you could have a, you know, a vast multitude of outcomes, and you're kind of, it's more like playing roulette at that point, where you're putting in your chips on one thing happening. And if that thing doesn't happen, then you're totally Yahtzee for the year and you don't get any winnings. So I would say any kind of overemphasis on a strategy or even a particular player or a roster construction, I would back away from that. And I would try to, I would vary things up a little bit. And even in some cases, if you do like a particular player, I would draft the player opposite him in the lineup. Let's say, you know, running back, if Alvin Kamara is your guy, and I think that's a fine guy to draft, I would take, you know, a certain amount of shares of Mark Ingram just to make sure that I have the other side of the coin in case something happens to Kamara. You know, it makes some sense to kind of insulate yourself against catastrophe where it makes some sense.
Yeah, I wish I had taken that advice last year. You mentioned earlier Spencer Ware and Kareem Hunt. A lot of Spencer Ware's the listeners have heard in my lineups throughout the show. So maybe if I had went a little bit more with Kareem Hunt, that wouldn't hurt me as much, but it hurt me in a big, big way. But if you're playing in basketball this year, you want to get interested, you want to get your first league if you're not used to playing it, or if you're playing it for a long, long time, let me tell you a little bit about the FFPC. That is the Fantasy Football Players Championship. They are the sponsor of today's show, and they are the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football. For most people, it is the off-season, but not for the FFPC, and certainly not for us. We're all looking to get as much fantasy football action in as we can. They have over 200 dynasty leagues that are active now, with entry fees starting from $77 all the way up to $2,500. And they haven't had a single Dynasty League fold in over 8 seasons. So there's orphan teams available to purchase right now. And if you want to go and check them out, head on over to the FFPC. Plus, if you're getting ready to draft in best ball now, their best ball leagues are opening. And you can get into those for $35 as the entry fee. So it's a real, real good competitive field over there. So don't miss out on the FFPC experience. Go to MyFFPC and register now. That is MyFFPC.com, the home of season-long high stakes football. So bouncing back, the next piece of information that I want to get from you, Josh, is what is the biggest miss you had in 2017 in best ball? Not to bring the tone of the show down too much, but let's hear it.
No, but these are the most important players to talk about on a review basis. Mine's Kenny Britt, bottom line. I drafted a lot of Kenny Britt. He was a 9th and 10th round fixture for me, so practically any draft I was in, if he was there in the 9th and 10th round, he was going to be on my team. I thought he had that much potential in the Cleveland offense. Obviously, that didn't work out very well. But I think looking back at those decisions, we can review and see why we made the decision the way we did and what we might do differently this time around if we had the same type of information that led us there in the first place. So for me, I'm looking at, okay, well, number one, I don't trust Hugh Jackson anymore. Number two, you know, I could say Kenny Britt's a bum. I don't know if I necessarily agree with that, but you could say that maybe is part of the case. And I could use those kind of data points to also assess what I thought were the metrics that were in favor of Britt and maybe weigh that decision a little bit more than I did before. So that's what I'm looking to do when I'm looking at my worst picks. Obviously, the guys that didn't get injured, they just didn't perform. You don't want to necessarily look at guys that got injured and say that was a bad pick. I think it's just not a good idea to do that, because you may have made a great pick. It just didn't work out because the guy got, you know, busted his shoulder or something. So it's important to make that differentiation in your review.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree with that. You know, I mentioned the Spencer Ware picks that I had earlier. I have no fault with that injury. You know, knee injuries are something that you just can't vouch for, and that happens every year in the NFL. It either falls for you or against you. And, you know, I mentioned already, is there anything that the community might be overemphasizing? Is there anything that we should be paying more attention to, particularly with your information at ADP? Is there anything that we're missing out on there?
I think, you know, probably the biggest thing is to pay attention to the rumors that are circling around out there. And really, for me, the best place to see rumors is Twitter and RotoWorld. See, you know, it basically just indications of player movement, because the market will react to those indications before they become reality. So in some cases, you know, you may see a player rumored to move to a beneficial offense, and it doesn't come to fruition, but the player's ADP will spike as if he were. And, you know, likewise, if a player does end up moving to that offense, then you'll see his ADP spike and then spike again once the move happens. So I would say it's difficult to stay ahead of the news, because it's impossible to predict what's going to happen. But what you can do is pay attention to the news, see where players could end up, and consider that when you make your draft decision. So do you want to try to get ahead of it and predict that a player is going to go somewhere that you like? Do you want to go ahead and draft him now a little bit ahead of schedule and make sure that he's on your team with the, you know, with the realization that there is some risk involved, and if it doesn't work out, then you've likely overpaid in hindsight. So it's obviously an investment risk, right? You have to weigh what the investment cost is worth to you. And if it's worth it to you, do you make the decision or not? So I would say, you know, package that back up, really just pay attention to the news, understand what player movement looks like at all times when you're in drafts, and then, you know, try to react accordingly.
Yeah, and I think that ties back into what you mentioned earlier with Rex Burkhead and his jump in ADP. He was somebody from a dynasty perspective that I was really interested in last offseason before he hit free agency, and then obviously he signed with the Patriots. That skyrocketed him up, as you mentioned, and then when Gillislee signed, that dropped him back down a bit. But if you had drafted him, like you mentioned, in that 17th to the 20th round, and then he jumps up to the 5th round, you know, that there's the sort of thing that you're trying to get in ahead of the crowd, because once it happens, you're kind of already too late at that point. So when we look then at the community, I mentioned as a whole, but if you're one of the kind of newer guys in the community, you haven't really got involved yet and you're starting out, you know, is there a lot of people kind of worry about the specific exposure to players? You know, if you have, you know, 50% exposure is probably too high, but if you're in around that 30 to 35%, that's kind of where I'd be happy with on my higher own players. But do you have a precise way of managing those exposures? Is it something you manage very carefully, or is it something that you're not all that concerned with? For me, it's something that I'm not that concerned with until, you know, you have those, you mentioned earlier, 20 drafts done. Well, if you're kind of halfway through what you plan to be your finished draft season, and you're above that percent, that might concern me a little bit. But I like to, if I like a player, I like to kind of go all in on them.
Yeah, I think you're going to have a mixed bag of results here. I think this early in the offseason, it makes some sense to color the board as much as possible on unclear situations, because that's where you're going to stand to profit the most from a, let's say, a points perspective on a week-to-week basis. On the other hand, though, if you do see, let's say, what you might think of as a screaming value, and last year the poster child for this was Todd Gurley, who you could get at the end of the second or early third round. If you see a player like that, that you feel really confident will blow up his ADP, even if it's a very high ADP, then it makes some sense to go ahead and, I think, to overweight yourself on that player, understanding the risk involved that if he gets injured or if it doesn't work out, then it's going to blow up some of your teams. So it depends on your strategy. If your strategy is to have a very balanced portfolio and invest across the board so that, you know, you're looking to make a little bit of profit if things go well and lose only a little bit of money if things don't go well, versus, you know, high risk, high reward, where you're overweight on a lot of players, you're making a lot of, you know, you're planting a lot of flags, making a lot of bets. And if those work out, then you're going to blow profit out of the water. If they don't work out, then you're going to end up broke. So, you know, deciding on your strategy is really going to be critical to what you do with your player allocations. Me personally, I don't pay much attention to how many times I've drafted a player. Now, I'll go look occasionally and say, oh, okay, well, I've got this guy in 60% of my drafts. I either need to throttle back a bit, or I need to decide if he's a guy that I'm going to be all in on. So, you know, some guys manage it down to the penny. Me personally, I just kind of have a 20,000 foot view and make adjustments as needed.
Yeah, the other side of that is, you know, you mentioned coloring the board as much as you can at this stage of the game. But do you ever be worried then about, you know, over diversifying? So you pretty much have nearly every player on the board, and you don't really have that core. So you don't have the players you believe in. And then if we get to the draft season, you know, and all those players hit, well, they're spread across so many teams that you might end up at the same time having nothing at the end of it all again.
Yeah, that's an excellent point, Colm. And so the way I would look at that is, you know, when I say color the board, you don't want to draft everybody. You can't. But you can have maybe a wider core group of players that you feel confident in. And those are the guys you're going to sprinkle on your rosters pretty in a distributed manner, I'll put it that way. And then as the offseason goes along, you can start to whittle that down, or maybe in some cases even open that up and balance it out even a little bit more. Or in my case, I tend to whittle down as the offseason goes along, and then I start to, you know, kind of group up my core players and invest more heavily. So it's I think you bring up a really interesting point of not spreading yourself too thin to where you can't win with the guys that you draft because they're just scattered everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, I mentioned earlier as well, we're talking about best ball. I mentioned the FFPC. I have a little nice thing here for the listeners. If you want to have an opportunity to win yourself a free $35 entry into a league with the FFPC, all you have to do for the next month is head on over to the iTunes page of RotoViz Radio and give us a written and review on there. If you do that, you'll be eligible to win an entry into one of those free $35 leagues with the FFPC. So if you're interested as well in joining a league with the FFPC and play against guys like me and some of the other RotoViz podcasters and writers, all you have to do is hit us up on email at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Send us over the email and we'll get that league set up. So that there is a perfect way to just try and get yourself into one of these leagues if you haven't already done so. And you know, again, iTunes, give us a written review on there. The other thing I want to ask you, Josh, I got your worst call last year, so I don't want to just be, you know, cause a downer on you on the show. What was your best call of 2017?
I think my best call was Todd Gurley, and I hate to say my best call was a high ADP guy, but at the time that I kind of identified him as a league winner, he was, you know, late second, early third round pick. And if you could go back in time and take Todd Gurley in the late second round of every one of your drafts, you had a very high probability of winning your league, because it also meant that you were likely pairing him with a player like, you know, Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott, Julio Jones, that type of player, maybe Antonio Brown. And if you were able to combine those two players, you were like a 60% chance to win your league last year. It was incredible.
Yeah, that's another interesting thing. You know, you mentioned there's, you know, the best value. The best value is the player who overproduces on his expectation. Todd Gurley certainly did that last year based on what his expectation at this stage of the year was. The other thing that's very interesting I've mentioned on a few shows was last year in particular, more so than pretty much any other year, if you had kind of that second overall pick, you really did fall into some good players if you avoided, you know, David Johnson. Is that a situation you find yourself in many times last year? I didn't have a lot of picks at the start of the draft, but if you did have that kind of second overall pick and then coming back the way, having that 23rd overall pick, it really fell nice for a lot of people.
Yeah, I was also one of those that barely ever got to pick at the, you know, the first four picks of the draft. I think of all my drafts, I got to draft two times at number four, one time at number two, and that was it. And I had well over, probably pretty close to 30 drafts all said and done by the end of the offseason. So that's pretty frustrating, to be honest. And I'm hoping that this year, let's say we'll call it the random number generator, although it certainly doesn't feel like it. You know, hopefully that random number generator is a little bit more kind this year to players that are, you know, playing a lot of different leagues and distributes your picks a lot more evenly than it has in the past. You know, I think that's going to be the case based on, you know, obviously some things that we've seen happen. There were a lot of folks that complained about it last year openly. I know I was one of them, just saying that, you know, based on history, if you weren't picking in the first four picks of the draft, then you were going to be kind of toast because you miss out on that 2-3 turn where you get a lot of the high upside players at the end of that tier that, in combination with your top three, top four pick, those are the league winners, is the way it worked out the last couple seasons. So, you know, if you're picking at the back half of the draft, like I was many times, then you're reaching for guys, you're hoping for the best. And in a lot of cases, it just kind of led to a meh roster at the end of the season.
Yeah, and, you know, we've touched on a lot of different parts of roster construction, if we're worried about having too many of a certain player, too much exposure to players on our team. But when I talked on the show to TJ Hernandez, a piece of information that he had that I thought was very good was to not worry too much about the overall roster construction in terms of zero RB or zero wide receiver, but to worry about having a set amount of, you know, quarterbacks, running backs, tight ends, and wide receivers when you get to the end of the draft, to have that amount of players that you want rather than to have a set strategy moving in. Is that something that you agree with based on the roster construction? Is it something that you look into? I know there's a lot of studies being done over the kind of the winning combinations of what we have here for the correct rosters in best ball.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it makes some sense to have an idea of your strategy and kind of save some things for later in the draft. You know, just kind of general strategy is if you're playing with the DST, defense and special teams in your best ball league, to save those for the last three or four rounds. And, you know, the scoring between defenses is so minimal that it doesn't make any sense to reach for one over another. And cost yourself the opportunity at a very high upside player at wide receiver or running back or tight end that can really win your league versus what the defense could give you drafting one, you know, in the 16th round versus the 17th round. So I think TJ certainly has the right idea. I follow a lot of his advice when it comes to analyzing roster construction. He and Mike Beerswater as well. So it's those guys have put out some good stuff, and I think they're spot on in that analysis.
Yeah, and both of those, when they were on, both said that you put out absolutely phenomenal work. So I think there's a trio there that are very much in agreement, and you definitely need to be following for your best ball advice. But when we look through the rest of it, you know, when I started playing in best ball leagues, that was something that I was very interested in, was that kind of roster. People talked about the roster construction, but you need to kind of have that idea of filling out the roster and the correct sort of strategy. But when you look back to when you started playing, or when, if you could look back now and give yourself one piece of advice prior to when you started playing best ball as a non-player, what's the best piece of advice you think, if you could only pick one, to give yourself that knowledge that you have now?
You know, honestly, it would be to probably, and I mentioned earlier, to be up on the news. I think as long as you're up on the news and you understand potential landing locations for players, potential roster roster construction, I'm going to say real-life NFL roster construction, what depth charts look like, then I think you're going to serve yourself really well in these drafts. You'll be able to spot some discrepancies in value as they develop in your individual drafts. And I think as long as you understand the current in the NFL at that time, then you're going to be in really good shape.
Yeah, it might be something as well, like, you know, we mentioned there if a player hits free agency, but the other side of it is that if you know the depth charts, and maybe you know the third string running back and whoever the second string running back, there might be a report comes out that, you know, it's not looking good for him, he might get cut. You know, if you can start to put him in at the bottom of those drafts, you know, in the 19th, 20th round when he isn't being drafted, sometimes that there can really springboard you. And then if you are in the zero RB thing, that if the starting running back gets injured, then you can have the opportunity to have him in your lineup and have an extreme value at the end of it all. So there's just keeping up to those, keeping up to the news, as you mentioned, following the beat reporters. I do say, when you were talking about listening to advice, follow the beat reporters, follow what you see on Roto World. Probably don't listen to what the coaches say, because sometimes a lot of that can not be valuable information at the end of it all. To somebody who played a little bit of best ball last year and is looking to, you know, get more into it, get more serious, didn't have any success really last year, what would be the best way you think somebody can improve their best ball game? Is it simply going to your Twitter page and following all your advice, or is there any other advice to slot in there, Josh?
You know, for someone that's looking to improve, the first thing I would do is look back and see why I didn't have success. So if you cannot assess why you probably didn't succeed the year before or the year before that, then I don't think you can make any kind of determination about what you need to do going forward. So I would say the first thing to do is study yourself. Know what happened that made you fail. That's certainly something I'm doing right now. I want to know why, other than injuries, I've kind of flamed out in a few situations last year. And then once I understand that, now I'm going to go forward and make a plan. And that plan could be, you know, follow as many best ball experts as I can on Twitter. It can be, you know, making sure I'm checking Roto World a couple times a day as events approach in the NFL offseason. And when I say events, I mean things like obviously the combine, the NFL draft, free agency, and then obviously training camp. So those are kind of landmark events in the NFL offseason where ADP tends to kind of resort itself, so to speak. So, you know, especially at NFL draft time, especially at free agency, and somewhat at training camp, you'll see ADP sometimes just totally flip-flop for certain players and certain teams based on, you know, a piece of news or a player moving somewhere. So, you know, I would do my best to probably assess myself. I also want to try to maybe balance some of the things I've done in the past that have gone a little bit awry and try to scale back some of the flag planting that I've done. And I think everybody's kind of guilty of planting flags. So I think it makes some sense to check yourself, do your quality control, and kind of chart your path forward based on what you've learned about yourself.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. You mentioned it as well when I asked about the worst call of 2017 for you, and I think that was a great answer that nobody else, I don't think, has mentioned so far in the show. And it's something you won't hear a lot of people say, and it's always that you have to know when you made those mistakes. It's easy to come on a show and say, yeah, I did pick this player, like, done great, absolutely fantastic, but it's a different story when you can say that I made the mistake. And like you mentioned with Kenny Britt, I had a flag planted in Kenny Britt last year, and it obviously didn't work out for me either. So when you look at those, it is all about kind of self-evaluation, looking back. And I think that is a really, really solid piece of advice there for anyone that played last year, whether it's best ball, whether it's dynasty, whether it's any type of fantasy league, or whether it's anything really in general. You always need to self-evaluate and see how you can improve it moving forward. So when we're talking about moving forward, 2018,
no, I think that's is kind of pretty much my plan right now. You know, another thing I wanted to mention, that it's in my plan personally this year, is to avoid the echo chamber that Twitter creates. And you know, there are other echo chambers out there. You know, there's probably one on Reddit. There's some on Facebook. I mean, echo chambers exist everywhere, social media. So I think social media is great for understanding who are the popular picks and who are the unpopular picks at any time. But the thing we need to be cognizant of when we're embedded in those social media ecospheres is that we need to understand when our ideas and our opinions run contrary to the crowd, not to change them to what the crowd thinks. Because in a lot of cases, our instincts probably are correct. And we need to pay attention to what our instincts and our information, our logic is telling us to do versus what the crowd is saying you should do. So, you know, taking that information in, reading best ball writers, understanding the data is great. But you also need to listen to yourself, think through the problem yourself, and come up with your own solution and then compare it with what you see out there. And in some cases, it's going to be the same. In a lot of cases, it's going to be different. And I would say your best opportunity to win best ball leagues is to listen to yourself, do your work, and then contrast what you've learned with what you see in the crowd. And in some cases, it's going to make sense to do what the crowd is also saying is a good idea. And in some cases, it's going to be where you need to stick to your guns and do what you think is right and be a contrarian, so to speak.
Yeah, I've just been nodding my head along in agreement for the last kind of, you know, minute of Josh talking there. So I agree with everything that's just been said, and I think it's really good advice heading into this year. There's been so much good advice on the show, courtesy of Josh himself. And
yeah, thanks, you know, Colin. It's always fun to get together with you. I appreciate you being patient with me this time and my schedule. Unfortunately, it's just been really hectic the last few weeks, and I don't see it slowing down anytime soon. But I had a window, and I can't do anything but squeeze you in when I've got one of those. So I appreciate the time.
And that's going to do it for today's edition of the RotoBiz Best Ball Series, the final one in the series. I hope you've enjoyed the series. If you've listened to this one, haven't listened back to the other one, we've had a lot of great guests on. TJ Hernandez, we had Chris Raybon on last week, Mike Beers has been on, Josh has been on, Jersey Jen was on. There's just so many different people who have been on the series. Todd Burrows was on as well. So there's just a lot of good shows up there. Go and check them out. They're all up there on rotoviz.com. They'll be on any podcast app if you're listening to this. Just go back and search through the history over the last kind of 3 weeks. So perfect time to get ready for the best ball season and listen to it. So my name is Colin Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. My guest today was Josh ADHD, who you can follow on Twitter at Fantasy ADHD. Have a good one. Thank you for listening to the RotoViz Best Ball Series. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio Podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Contact us via email at rotogmail.com and follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.